Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann.
And I'm Janice Cunning.
And we are super excited to have two guests today here with us, Kimberly and Amanda, and I'm going to introduce them in a moment. They do their own podcast, so we've got a whole podcast vibe going on here, and I'm excited to have them here today. So first, we have Amanda Day, one of the co-hosts of the Fundraising Heyday podcast. She is a sought-after speaker, trainer, and writer. She focuses on helping local governments, nonprofits, and other organizations understand the grant process and how to meet their community's funding needs. She has 20 years of experience in the industry, including writing and managing large federal proposals, small family foundation requests, and everything in between. She's also a concert junkie, a book nerd, and a lover of sweet tea. Our other guest today is Kimberly Hayes DeMuga. She co-hosts as well, along with Amanda, the Fundraising Heyday podcast. She shares there and in her professional life more than 25 years of experience in nonprofit management, fundraising, and grant seeking in the sectors of health and human services and education. She's the co-author of the book, Prepare for the GPC Exam, Earn Your Grant Professional Certified Credential. She's a national keynote speaker, trainer, and coach through Hayes DeMuga Consulting. When she's not consulting, she writes young adult historical fiction and drinks ridiculous amounts of tea. So welcome. We're happy to have you both.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's good to be here and to be fully caffeinated. So
excellent. Yeah, I'm still working on being caffeinated, which maybe you can tell.
And I'm assuming that Heyday comes from the two names. Is that where Fundraising Heyday came from? It's a clever.
That is correct. That was Amanda's brilliant stroke of genius. And we fully realized that Heyday is actually spelled H-E-Y-D-A-Y. We know that, but we're okay with taking it and making it our own because it's the way we spell it.
But if you change it, you're going to announce it on your next podcast.
Right? That's right.
Decide to change it.
And I feel like it's like extra fun because Margaret was just a guest on Fundraising Heyday, and we'll link to that in the show notes. Everyone can have a listen to that as well. And now you're here. So it's fun to do this little podcast swap and, and get our listeners exposed to other, because there's so many, it feels like there's so many great fundraising podcasts now. So it's really fun to let our listeners know about another one.
Yeah. I think the field's been growing steadily over the past few years. I keep seeing more and more come out, which is exciting to have other shows that are talking about some of the same things. So.
Yes. Yeah. And you wrote a blog for us that we'll also link to specifically about grant writing, which I was saying to Margaret, I don't know if we've had guests. I can't remember having a guest on before to really dive into grant writing. So it's going to be a fun conversation to get into that.
How many people talk about grants as fun, except for you and me, Kimberly? I love it.
Sometimes we talk about grants as fun. Sometimes we talk about grants in our special adult We Are Mad voices, but they can certainly do a lot of good in the world, but I think they're very frequently misunderstood.
Yeah. So maybe start by telling us, this is a specialty area of yours. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to pick this topic of myth busters in the grant world? What are you seeing and hearing?
I wish I could say that what we're seeing has changed dramatically and that everyone knows all the basics about grant seeking and we're really into the minutiae of how to navigate online portals, but that's really a lie. I think, and I know Amanda will agree with me, that there's a lot of still basic assumptions about grants that are just not true. And if we don't help you bust those myths, then it's actually going to be counterproductive to try and bring in that revenue to do those transformative things in your community that big ticket grants and even smaller grants can do. But I think it's just a big misconception about the way grants work. Don't you think, Amanda?
Yeah. And I would say too, I mean, there are plenty of people out there like Kimberly and I, who that is our career. We are, immersed in the world of grants. And over the years, obviously, we start to understand how everything works, but there are still so many people who, whether you're a police officer, a school teacher, an admin assistant, whatever your position is, where you work, where one day your boss just goes, hey, there's this thing called grants and there's all kinds of money. Just, you know, spend like an hour a day and go get some money for us.
Can you just do that? Can you just write that application? Because it won't take you but a minute. Yeah. I mean, and we could really use the money now.
And for people who don't know, they just assume, well, my boss must know what they're talking about, you know? So that's why we, you know, this is something we've collected lots of myths over the years that people seem to think. So we thought it was time to start busting them up.
I think the biggest one is actually what most grants do. And they're usually, and I'm not talking about COVID relief or disaster relief. That's a very different kind of thing, obviously, and needed to come in as fast as possible for whatever's needed. But most grants are restricted to a specific program or an aspect of a program or a thing or a building or a position or something like that. And it is what it is. And so there's not, it can help augment and grow and supplement and maybe perhaps provide seed money. But for most grant making, most grant makers don't usually see it as, hey, we're just going to give you this money for general operating support because you're great. You know, do with it what you will. That's just usually not the way it works. And I just think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, that you can get it grant funding to do whatever you think is the emergency. And it's just not the way it works.
Yeah. And all that, you know, grant money is a great, important part of a diversified revenue budget, mm-hmm. obviously. And we love nonprofits that get those. I mean, my particular work is more with individual fundraising. And I'd love to just sort of double click a little, like, what, you know, I have a narrative sometimes that people are especially attracted to grants because, you know, it feels like there's already money, they're already giving money away. Like, it's an easier ask for people who feel a little anxious sometimes asking individuals. So I see sometimes with groups that I work with a magnetic pull towards, and it's really not sometimes the right time, or they're not. So, but I'm curious, you know, from you guys, when is the right time to say, let's put our time into writing a grant right now, as opposed to a different kind of fundraising? When are they well primed to get some money?
I'd say, first of all, grants are not something you just want to willy-nilly one day say, hey, we're going to go for a grant tomorrow, right? It takes a lot of prep time ahead of time. And, you know, it's going to depend too, from funder to funder, what they ask for. I think to me, one of the craziest and most difficult things about grants is every single one of them is different, right? It's not like, hey, I've put this application together. It's perfect. I'm just going to send it out to 50 places and we're golden. Every funder has different requirements about what they want from you and how much space they give you to write and what questions they ask, whether you can send them a one-page letter or whether it ends up being a 200-page proposal with 30 attachments onto it, right? So it takes a lot of prep on the front end. First of all, just even figuring out what grants your organization is eligible for. And then also, even if you are eligible, let's say your project is you're trying to do this big capital campaign because you need a new building. Well, just because you're eligible for a grant doesn't mean that funder will fund capital campaigns, right? So you've got to weed through all that's out there to figure out the right fits for your organization and for the work that you're doing and the types of things that you're doing. And then you've got to make sure you've got all your ducks in a row, because again, most funders, they want to see a copy of your 501c3 letter. They want to see maybe your org chart. They want to have your board of directors list. They want your most recent budget. They want your most recent set of audited financial statements, right? And you may not have all these things. And so there's no sense of, I'm going to apply for this grant. Well, if half the things on there you don't have, then you're in trouble, right? I had a client the other day that was working on, it was actually an application to the Coca-Cola Foundation. Everything aligned. Their mission was perfect for the things that Coca-Cola funded. Like, everything was perfect until I get to the very end. And one of the required documents, and I've never seen this before from a funder, but they wanted that agency had to have a policy that talked about that you had anti-discriminatory practices, that you didn't discriminate in the workplace and how you dealt with that. You had to have a approved policy. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I mean, we don't do that. I'm like, but that's great. But do you have a policy that's been approved by your board? And they're like, well, no. And I said, well, how quickly can you get one put together? And so right now the application's on hold until they can figure that out. So they may not be able to apply at this point just because of that one thing. So I'd say, you know, if you think you want to go for grants, you need to start working now, not to go for it, but to start figuring out, are we even ready? Grant readiness is something a lot of grant professionals like to talk about. Is your organization grant ready?
Yeah, I think, go ahead.
I'm just going to double click. I mean, is it, would you have groups come to you and they're, you know, just saying, hey, we just need some general operating. We're looking, you know, we have a specific program in mind. Do you ever tell groups, I don't think you should write a grant. I think you should try to do this a different way.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's where I'm curious. What do you see that makes you say, oh yes, to let's spend time getting policies and jumping through the hoops to get grant money versus, I don't think so. That's not the right way for you guys right now.
I have, as a consultant, I have coached organizations and their senior leadership, typically like small to medium sized nonprofits, toward grant readiness as just a part of what they need to do. They may have someone on staff who is a very good business writer who has expressed an interest in the mechanics of putting the grant together. But a lot of times it's me talking myself out of a job, as weird as that sounds. It's like, you know what? This is not the right fit. In fact, I did it yesterday. I'm working with a faculty member at a regional public university in Georgia. It's not one of the larger ones, but it's a regional one. And she is heading a program that offers access to mental health. It's a community, it's an external community facing family therapy center. And she had identified this private funder. And she was like, oh, this sounds really good. And I knew enough about this funder to go, this is probably not the right fit, but let's work through it, because part of my job with this person is coaching her to prepare her for these critical thinking skills. And she's a PhD. There are many, many critical thinking skills that she possesses, but there's also a very strong temptation, I think, and it's totally understandable. You're seeing this announcement for grant funding, and it's kind of sort of maybe a little bit something that you're doing, and you just want to jump on it, right? Because you want that money. And I think it's a completely normal response. But in this case, I was like, okay, tell me more. You can apply as a university, because sometimes, as you know, there may be stipulations that, hey, nonprofits can apply, but not public institutions. Or it could be public institutions and local governments can apply, but probably not nonprofits. It just depends on if is it government funding, is it private funding? But in this case, they were very, very clear on the website in the description that their priority funding was for smaller organizations led by either Black or Indigenous people of color, in projects that in the mental health sector that affected people of color. And I was like, so where do you think you fit? I mean, just, I was like, so where do you see yourself? And she was like, she took a breath and she was like, yes, yes, you know, I am Asian American, but I'm not Black, and I'm not a member of any sort of Indigenous people. And I said, yeah, and the leadership of your university is white, right? Because we knew that. And she's like, right. And she's like, yeah, we're not going to do this. And I'm like, you could, because technically you're eligible, but it's really not that good fit. And I just don't believe in wasting time or money. And I didn't believe that as an employee either, to just, and those were some uncomfortable discussions sometimes with board members, you know, well, the Gates Foundation has this money. I'm like, yeah, we're not, at the time, we're not doing malaria eradication. We're not, I don't see the fit. They have money and we are a nonprofit and we could apply, but eligibility, like Amanda said, being eligible and having the good fit are two different things. And that's a key concept that I think a lot of people get a little lost behind, because they're so passionate about the work they're doing. And of course their work is important, and who wouldn't want to fund it? But the folks who have the money are making the rules with how their money is going to be distributed. So the best thing to do is to sort of understand that and then do the matchmaker thing.
Yeah.
And I think that goes across better too. If, like, when I tell people, like, you know what, could we apply for this? Yes. Are we going to get it? Probably not.
Probably not.
But rather than me spending 80 hours on this, let me show you these five other smaller grants, but you are more likely to get most of these, which all added together is the same as this one big one. So sometimes you kind of have to do that bait and switch, like instead of this, look over here.
And that not that we're advocating baiting and switching as a sound business model. We know that's naughty and wrong. But you make a great point about having a list, like getting the priorities together, like what do we really need funded? And then, so what's out there that matches what we need based on what our community members tell us, or if our community members do not speak, the people who speak for them, you know, what do we know? And then let's do the match from there and look for the money there instead of just chasing money.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, as I'm listening to you, I mostly worked in prospect research in my career, but I had a job briefly where I had a little bit to do with grants, saying to Margaret, it's not something I know a lot about, but I felt as a staff person, like a sort of frustration that my manager wanted me to apply for grants, but the organization, when you talk about readiness, like did not have the detail of information to sort of like show that we needed the grant, but also then like what was expected after, like even if we were to miraculously get this, how would we demonstrate, you know, that we use the money in the proper way? So maybe speak to that a little bit, because I think sometimes as a staff person, like you're getting pressure from your manager or the board, and you're the one in the details, and it's like how do you help them sort of explain like to the organization that they're not ready or that they need to get ready?
Oh, Amanda, can I hop in with my story about Six Flags? Can I?
Oh, yes.
So we're calling today from the Metro Atlanta area, and included in that expanding area full of cars and trees and mosquitoes and everything is Six Flags over Georgia, right? So I'm sure that wherever you're listening, there's probably some kind of amusement park somewhere, somehow, or you've seen a picture of one. And if you can think about that, there's usually, there's a roller coaster, you know, maybe a feature ride that everyone is super into and wants to go. And most of these have all sorts of signage as you come in. And one of them is, I know you can't see me, but they have like a sign, I'm holding out my arm, and it says, you have to be this tall to ride this ride. And so I had to use that analogy once because they, you know, I was getting heat. Well, you're the grant writer, make it rain. What's your deal? Although perhaps it wasn't quite like that, but the intent was like that. And I was like, and I had to like call upon the spirit of my grandmother Hayes, a gracious lady raised in the South who was just so diplomatic at all times. But actually I just had to say, well, you know, this funder, they just want all this information. I know y'all aren't comfortable releasing it. And I had a list. I'm like, so I can't actually apply, we'll get disqualified. So it, you know, it's just like you have to be this tall to ride their ride. It's their ride and they set the height requirement and we don't meet it. So we could meet it if you wanted to, but if you don't want to do that, that's fine. And I can go look for other funding. And yeah, that greased the wheels. That was like, oh, well then I guess we can release this financial information. I'm like, yeah, I guess you can, because it's like part of a 990, which you got to do anyway. But it's like sometimes there's a protectiveness around releasing even an overview of the budget or information about the board of directors, rather. That, I mean, I applaud that you're wanting to protect people, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, you're a nonprofit, you got to release this information anyway. And if you want grantors to give you money, they're going to kind of have to know what your financial situation is, just like you would go to the bank for a loan for a car or a house or whatever. You're probably going to have to say how much money you have.
You don't get to look back at them and say, none of your business.
No, I just need this house. And no, I'm not going to tell you, that's private. And they're like, yeah, our money's private. So anyway.
Well, and that, you know, and sometimes that works. Kimberly and I talk a lot on our show and with other folks about educating up, you know, because, you know, you are the grant expert and you don't want to be, you know, trying not to be snarky about it. But sometimes it's like, look, you hired me because I know what I'm talking about. And I really need you to listen to me here and lay it all out. And sometimes they do. And sometimes they don't. And I mean, I don't know how many times I worked for a local government for 12 years. I was at the same place doing grants for them. And I wrote plenty of grants that I recommended we not write, but the boss and the board basically said, we don't care, do it anyway.
Which is a great and useful attitude to have, but unfortunately it is kind of prevalent. So if you're listening, and your grant person who has experience is like, hey, we don't seem to meet all these criteria, then say that's probably not the right fit, or what do we have to do to get there for next year? Yeah. Because if your paycheck is on the line and your boss tells you write the grant and you're like, okay, but we're not going to get it. It's actually, if you're pushing someone into that who's an expert in that area, you're wasting your organization's money and time. Oh, you're wasting resources on this. You know, trust your grant writers. If they, if they've got their chops, they're there to steer in the right direction so that you're in a grant that you're more likely to receive because you go beyond the basic criteria into a really good fit.
When I'm assuming that occasionally with clients you will look at a grant proposal that they've written in the past that did not get funding even though it met the criteria. So what are some of the other places where people fall in holes trying to get money?
I would say I've got one right off the bat that is so, again, it's so basic, but it's so true and it keeps happening. The proposal in question, it was a good fit, and maybe where it fell down is it simply didn't answer all the questions in the proposal. I know you're like, no, come on, Kimberly, there's a deeper secret. I'm like, nope, if question one has three parts, I'm going to go and answer each of the three part question. Am I going to go, well, this is actually four questions in one, and maybe, but that's counterproductive. I'm going to answer the questions in the order in which they put them, because they either paid somebody a lot of money or they spent a lot of time coming up with this application, this online portal, this packet, whatever it is, and they seem to want things in a certain way. So I'm not going to argue about it. You know, if they want 12 point times Roman, I'm not going to argue that that's a little outmoded, and design wise, I don't know if that's the easiest to read. I'm just going to do it. If they want to know about, if they want a need statement that talks about geographical areas served, demographics of the clients or communities served, and basic financial data for the whole region. I'm just making this up, but those are some fairly common components. I'm going to structure that answer, and it's going to go, you know, first, I'm going to address the first things first, the second things second, and the third. And if it's a very formal proposal, I might say first, yada-da-da-da. Second, blah, 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 blah. And third, here you go. And I think that that's where you can get into trouble if you are have the meet that match, but you don't answer the questions, because in the end, for now, AI, I don't think there are any funders that have like AI sort of algorithmic computer scanners that are reading these proposals. They're actual people, and I just want to line it up and in the order, like I said. And I'm not a person who's fond of always following rules just for the sake of it. I'm probably the opposite, but in this particular case, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is what you want, this is what you get. And so I feel like that's the place where people can kind of struggle, is maybe either being, you know, tired or trying to write too much, or not understanding that, yeah, those questions are in there for a reason, even if it's a reason you may not understand.
Amanda, kind of reminds me like what you said earlier, Amanda, like that it's like, I think sometimes it is overwhelming because when you start, you might think like, oh, once I gather all this information, then I'll just be able to knock these things off. And then each one is so different that maybe people, it's kind of like applying for jobs, I think too, right? Like, of course, you have to really craft that cover letter for every job. But when you're in the midst of applying for so many jobs, it can just become tiring. You're sort of like, could I get away with just, you know,
I'm really good. Please hire me. Love, Kimberly. Yeah. It's like, just, can you just?
I'll just get a plate of cookies.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and I would say too, everything that Kimberly said is true. And I mean, I can't stress enough that.
I'm deeply comforted by that. Thank you.
Everything she said was true. But I think it can be very easy to forget that and you did say this, Kimberly, but I want to stress it. Human beings have to read this.
Yes.
Okay. It's not just like, oh, yep, they put stuff together, looks good, we're going to fund them. It's most grants are competitive. You're going to get rejected. I mean, I still get rejection letters. I've been doing it for 20 years. I don't get every grant I write because they are competitive. There's more people wanting the money than there's money available. Yes.
Oh, I would just like to say that I am just going to say this. If there's a consultant or perhaps a potential employee that comes to you, nonprofit leader, and says, oh, I would be a great fit for your grant manager or senior grant writer job. I've gotten every grant I've ever written for. I'm not going to say, oh, that person's lying. I would say, how many grants have you actually written? I would be very suspicious of that as a metric for success for a grant writer with any level of experience, because as Amanda just said, sometimes you might be asked to write grants where you're like, yeah, there's no chance in hell. Okay, but you told me to do it and I'll do it. Or there could be grants that change the foundation, may the boards there may change their focus area that year. I mean, there's so many things. So clearly, mm-hmm. if the person has never secured a grant, that's also a cause for concern. But if they're telling you, I have 100% success rate, and you know, let's see, did they write 5 grants, or did they write 50 or 500? And I would just, I'm just putting that plug out there, because I'm not sure that that's the right way to measure someone's success.
Yeah, I love what you're reminding of us of, Kimberly, is at the end of the day, there's subjective in this process, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just people.
It's just humans. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because I would not tell you that I've gotten every grant that I've ever submitted. And in one case, we were a finalist for a very big, prestigious grant. And they said at the end of the day, and I'm in Boulder, Colorado, they said, you just couldn't compete with Detroit. Like, nobody believed you needed the money as much as the equivalent problem in another city. And it was a great proposal. Nobody bought that you should get this over somebody else. And, you know, it was great feedback because, oh, there's nothing I can do to change minds on that one, I don't think. And
yeah, if the need is greater somewhere else, then
that's sort of so
you can put together the best grant proposal and answer all the questions in order. But yeah, if you're from Boulder or I'm thinking maybe Austin versus Mississippi, right? Yeah. The perception there, and backed up probably by the data, is going to be that they're probably greater, depending on the subject matter, right? There's going to be greater pockets of need in, even around Jackson or in rural Mississippi than there might be in Austin. But there's also the optics and the perception. And even if there's a rubric that grant reviewers use, like Amanda and I have reviewed grants from the state, and they provide training and there's a chart and you make your notes on each, you know, there's still going to be that human component that enters into it. And I bet you most grant reviewers probably, that's not their day job. It either is other duties as assigned, or they're a board member, or they're a volunteer at United Way or what have you, and they're doing this after work or on the weekend. And, you know, I just try and keep that in person in mind, because Margaret, it made me think of what you first said when we got started about people might be drawn toward grants versus asking individuals, because maybe it's a little safer, or there's already money there. And it's like, yeah, but there's still people there. And as an mm-hmm. introvert, I'm just here to tell you that there are people there, and it really behooves you to keep that in mind, like right toward that person that may or may not know anything about what's going on in Boulder, Colorado, or whatever the need may be, but to write and answer things in order to make it easy for them to understand, so that you can connect them with what's happening.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Well, we love to offer our listeners something that they can try based on all of the things. And well, first I'm going to say the thing they can try is to read your blog, because I think there are 5 great myth busters in there. But then I'd love for you guys to add on to that. What else?
I would say one of the things, especially for folks that are new to the grant writing world, is calendaring can really help you out. And what I mean by that is, go ahead, don't just go, oh, there's a grant, let me chase it. Oh, wait, now there's this grant, let me chase it. Instead,
squirrel.
Do time up front. Squirrel, yes, squirrel moments. And they do, they still happen no matter how organized and planned you are, trust me. Thank you, COVID money that has just come out of our ears these past 12, 18 months. But what you need to do at the beginning is start with the research and figure out what are the grants out there that fit the work you're doing and are the ones you want to go. And most of them are pretty cyclical, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them either have a one time a year deadline, or maybe if it's a smaller foundation, they may, every time they meet, so once a quarter, they may have deadlines, or they may say, we take applications anytime, there is no deadline, mm-hmm. right? I've seen that too with foundations. But figure out when all the deadlines are, so that way you can kind of start and figure out, okay, if you're starting it now for 2022, you can go, oh my gosh, okay, so we have nothing due in January, but we have five grants due in February. Maybe we don't need to wait till February. Maybe in January we need to get started early. Or, oh my gosh, I thought I was going on a summer vacation, but it looks like we have 1,000 grant applications due in June and July. So, you know, either we need to work ahead, or we need to think about, you know, when I can be out of the office and that sort of thing. So my go-to, if you're new to the grant world, would just be start with figuring out what grants you want to go for and putting your calendar for the year together. It'll make your life easier. Trust me. Ask me how I know.
Hard-earned wisdom.
Yes.
Yeah. And what is the best way for people to find you guys if they would like to connect with you or listen to your podcast?
I'd say you can find our podcast, which is Fundraising Heyday, most anywhere on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But we also have a website, which is fundraisingheyday.com. And again, Heyday is HAYDAY. But there you can find the podcast. We have blog posts on there as well. And we're all over social media. So if you can just look for Fundraising Heyday. But we'd love to have you check out our show. We like to share all kinds of things about the grant and fundraising world.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for coming on, for inviting Margaret to be on your show. It's kind of cool. We've done sometimes in the past, but it's never kind of happened all in the same like week. So
this is our first swap out.
So that's made it even more delightful. So so we're and for listeners of our podcast, you know, we also like to share a free resource from Fundraising Leadership, and we have something a little bit different and special this week, which is I don't know, Margaret, if we've really made it clear that you really are our fundraising specialist and the person who does the most work in terms of fundraising coaching on our team. And so Margaret is actually happy if anyone wants to reach out and email her, and we'll put her email in the show notes. They can get a half hour strategy session just to talk about whatever kind of fundraising issues or...
Yes, I think fundraising issues. If they have specific grant questions, they should reach out to our guests today, because that is not as strongly in my wheelhouse. But yes, fundraising strategy and fundraising dread are sort of the two places that I have a sweet spot.
So,
would love to connect with people.
Yeah, you're very much like a shifting mindsets around fundraising, and also I know storytelling, another passion of yours. So yeah, so if you have questions about grants, then get on that Heyday, Fundraising Heyday website. And if you have other issues and you want to have a bit of a chat with Margaret, then that resource is available to you. And we'll just remind you, the great try this from Amanda and Kimberly is really to get clear on the calendar, like, look ahead. It's almost the end of at least the calendar year, so this is a good time to do that. Look ahead, see what's coming up, and make sure you're ready and prepared. And then I think when you're ready and prepared, I think you were kind of hinting at this, Amanda, then when the unexpected things come, you'll be even more ready.
Exactly.
Take advantage of those, because at least you
or you'll be less not ready, at least.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the show, you can help us continue to bring thoughtful content with a monthly or annual contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. Make a contribution today using the link in the show notes. Now, go put it into practice.